I cannot understand how Harry Kane, the level of player he is, goes into a contract with no clause in it. I can't understand it.
There's talk about a gentleman's agreement. It's ridiculous. Anyone who thinks they'll have an agreement with a club, unless it's written in a contract, forget about it.
And welcome to the Sound of Football podcast. I'm Graham Sibley, and as ever, I'm joined by Jan Bilton.
Hello.
And Terry DeFellin.
Hello.
I say as ever, but of course, this might be the first episode you've ever listened to. This is our 13th season, but this might be the first time you've ever come across us. And if so, welcome. We hope you enjoy what we talk about, and that is the nonsense that is the world of football. Jan, there's been a lot of nonsense, isn't there? I mean, I took my eye off the ball, I must admit, over the last 4 weeks, because we had a four-week break, the longest break we've had on the podcast for over 2 years. And I thought, I'm going to watch the Olympics and I'm just going to relax and I'm going to absorb other sport. I did watch some of the women's football in the Olympics. I didn't watch any of the men's because, quite frankly, I didn't need to. But I came back and it was like you've left the house in charge of teenagers. And basically, I come back to football and there's just mess everywhere, isn't there?
There certainly is. There's fag ends in the christening bowl. There's moustaches been drawn on all the family portraits. And there's just pizza boxes everywhere and a suspicious smell knocking around the place as well. But yeah, it has gone all a bit mental, hasn't it? That's what happens when you have Olympics.
Yeah.
I just have to point out, I'm no fan of the Olympics. I'm no fan of running around, jumping over things and chucking stuff, which is all it is. I get that gag in once every 4 years. I've waited an extra year for that one. So, but yeah, it's got a bit crazy everywhere, really, isn't it? There's huge amounts of money being thrown around or not. Some big clubs are in trouble and it's all happening. And it all starts next week. Well, depending on who you support, my lot started last week.
Yes, they did indeed. And they started off with a win. Terry, how's your pre-season going?
Yeah, well, I mean, in some respects, my pre-season's sort of ended a couple of weeks ago because a regular listeners will know I follow the German football. And the DFB Pokal started on Friday, last weekend. So we've had the first round of the German Cup. And that is a competitive round of fixes. It comes the week before the Bundesliga kicks off. I was watching that this week. I also went to a competitive live fixture in the actual flesh live. Went to a game, a league game, albeit non-league, Skiffle level 2, Shoreham versus Seaford, of which Seaford won 5-0, which was bad on the home time. So, I mean, actually, in a very, very meaningful way, the season has started for me. And if you count Bundesliga 2, and I'm an occasional watcher of Bundesliga 2, it started about 2-3 weeks ago.
Yeah, and of course, you did have some reasonably good news. And I know you mentioned on Twitter that it was tempered good news in the fact that up until about a week or so ago, you didn't know where you were going to be watching your German football, did you?
No, that's right. It's gone. The rights were left BT Sport, or BT Sport surrendered the rights, or they didn't pick them up, or they chose not to renew them. We're not entirely certain what happened. It's not terribly important. UK TV sports rights are a very, very dry subject, but it is alarming how often they're discussed on this podcast. it turns out the rights went to Sky. It wasn't actually a massive surprise that they were going to go to Sky, but they took a very long time announcing it. And they're not showing the Bundesliga 2, which is a great shame because BT were showing Bundesliga 2. And they're not committing to showing all of the live games in the way that BT did. They are saying that they'll be putting some live games on their digital service on Sky YouTube, but interestingly, they've not scheduled those yet. They haven't turned up on live football on TV, which, as we know, is the go-to site for these things. And my concern is that actually they're going to scale back the coverage. And in fact, the last time Sky had Bundesliga coverage, which was admittedly quite a long time ago, they lost interest after a season because it didn't rate. So I'm a little bit pessimistic as to what that means for those of us who create Bundesliga content specifically for the UK market. in principle, it could be a good thing because, of course, Sky have got loads more subscribers and so therefore there's a much bigger audience reach. And if they do show the games live on YouTube, then, of course, it's going out free to air effectively. So this can be quite good. But equally, if they've got no interest, talk is that this wasn't an editorial choice by Sky. This was a choice made by Sky's owners who say, look, we've got the Bundesliga for Sky Italia and for Sky Deutschland. We want it for Sky UK. So just buy it, will you? But then the Sky's editorial lot were presented with these rights, said, right, on you go. You're now covering this. And that's not a great way to start. But I may be wrong about that. But anyway, that is genuinely as much as I've got to say about that. Please don't switch off.
Yes, it is a dry subject, but we're never afraid of exploring dry subjects on this podcast. One thing we do have to sort out this season is, are we going to be making predictions on this podcast? Because last season we did break from the norm. We don't make predictions normally on the podcast, but last season, obviously with COVID, yeah, everything was a bit crazy and a bit weird. We did decide to start making predictions. Jan, do you think we should stop making predictions now?
Well, I made a prediction that Italy would win the Euros, and they did. I even put £5 on it and won it after watching the first game. So I'm actually up on predictions. So I don't see why not, but I do miss hearing Terry say, we don't make predictions in The Sound of Football, but I wouldn't be surprised if. So I'm happy to go either way, Graham.
Well, Terry, it's your vote then.
I think that it would be good to continue with the predictions.
Yeah.
But I wouldn't be at all surprised if I said from time to time that I wouldn't be at all surprised if something happened.
Well, there you go, listeners. You'll have to wait and see if we do make predictions. Well, Terry, talking about unpredictable things, you said it was the Pokal at the weekend, and there's usually a few upsets, isn't there? Because it is the week before the season starts. It's seeded, so bigger teams face lower division sides. Were there any upsets this time around?
Well, there was a half upset insofar as Greuther Fürth were knocked out, but it was knocked out on penalties. They are a newly promoted side, though, so I think we can give them that. But the big story was Waldhof Mannheim of the third division knocking out Eintracht Frankfurt, who finished fifth last season. So there's a couple of caveats to this. Waldhof are 3 or 4 weeks into their season now, so they're up and running. And Eintracht have a new coach, and they've lost André Silva, and they've also had a bit of a change in style and philosophy, and they were pretty hopeless in that game. They lost 2-0 and lost a man as well. It went down to 10 men. And it could have been 3 or 4 or even 5 were it not for their goalkeeper, Kevin Trapp. Yeah, it's a bit of a shock. People are saying that the last coach, Adi Hütter, with his first game in charge, he lost in the cup as well to a third division side called Ulm, and then went on to have a very, very good career at Eintracht and indeed qualified them for the Europa League, almost for the Champions League. But I suspect that I'm not predicting the same thing happening to them, because apart from anything else, Eintracht no longer have Luka Jovic or Ante Rebic in the side, which actually explains Frankfurt's decline far more than any change in coach, so, or any omens like that. So could be a long season for Frankfurt.
Jan, your side, Sunderland, were in action at the weekend. Another season in League One. What's the feeling like around the club at the moment? Is it just, oh my God, here we go again, another season in League One? Or is there signs of positivity?
Well, there's two schools of thought prior to the kickoff on Saturday. Was that the club isn't doing anything to replace all of the players that they let go. Just so you know, Charlie White, who scored over 30 goals for us last season, was just allowed to leave. His contract just ran down. Max Power, Chris Maguire, all of those went, and a few others as well. Some loanees weren't renewed either. So there were people panicking. And then there were people saying, well, at least the club's not panicking, because maybe they're being measured about it. I found myself drifting between the two all the way up to the game. And thankfully, I didn't have to listen on the radio or anything. That was actually at a wedding on Saturday. So I just saw the scores at the end. But a good solid win, really. And we've brought in some younger players, got a cracking centre-back called Callum Doyle, who's only 17. And he's on loan from Manchester City, and he went straight into the side and did very well by all accounts, which is really great. But some of the younger kids from the academy are coming through as well, and they've been given starts. And, you know, Wigan are no slouches, so we start off really, really well. So I'm quite pleased, but it is only one game. So I'd imagine there's going to be some more recruitment to be done, and hopefully we'll actually get out of this division. unless there's some other kind of pandemic that's going to get thrown at us, some other kind, there'll be some penalty shootout at somewhere along the way. So I'd be happy, obviously, with promotion. If we won it outright, I'd be even more delighted, along with retaining the Papa John's Pizza Cup. That's my objectives for the season.
Yeah, one game down, 45 to go. Maybe 48 if you go through up via the playoffs. Terry, it's been an interesting summer for Palace, isn't it? New manager, of course, Premier League mainstays Crystal Palace. And they've sifted through the squad a bit, haven't they? They've got rid of some of the older players. They quite notably had one of the oldest squads in the league. You finally managed to get shot of Wayne Hennessy now. How do you feel about the season ahead?
Well, I'm quite excited about the season ahead because I'm very excited about the players that we've signed. It was talked about quite a lot last season that there was a kind of critical mass of players that are coming to the end of their contracts, and some of them were first teamers. So Andros Townsend, for example, Patrick Van Aanholt, Gary Cahill, Scott Dann, Mamadou Sakho, who has not really spent a great deal of time in the first team, and yes, indeed, Wayne Hennessy, all coming up, and that there would have to be changes made. And in addition to that, of course, then there was the question mark about the coach, and whether the coach would stay, Roy Hodgson. And he didn't. And Patrick Vieira's come in, and he's being credited with this new wave of young players that are coming through, specifically. Mark Guay from Chelsea, who'd been playing in the Championship and has done really, really well. Joachim Andersen, who I understand was Fulham's best defender. And I mean, in fairness, that's not a great accolade, but apparently he was very, very good. Another centre-back, two centre-backs. I mean, you know, sensible, rounded signing. Michael Olise, I think, we're supposed to be very, very pleased about. Similarly, Conor Gallagher as well. And we've even signed Remy Matthews from Sunderland, Jan, one of the players who got offloaded from your lot, came across to us. And it's being sort of like portrayed as some kind of revolution going on there, and Vieira, the new coach, being at the front of it. But my feeling must be that certainly for players like Olise, that guy was being scouted by a lot of other clubs. I think Palace must have worked quite hard to get him. And Riviera's only just come through the door. And we do have a director of football, you know, Dougie Friedman. And I can't help but wonder whether or not he's the guy who's actually been making these signings. But maybe what's happening is that Vieira has been able to persuade them to come. And a large preponderance of them coming from South London, and with them wanting more as well. We want Eddie Nketiah and Ademola Lookman as well, both South London boys as well. They could be coming into the club. So there seems to be this kind of change in philosophy. This kind of born in South London thing has been a bit of a brand for Crystal Palace for quite some time now. And it's interesting that they're kind of, you know, trying to now incorporate it into their recruitment philosophy as well. It's worth pointing out that South London is teeming with talented footballers, many of whom end up playing for any other club apart from the South London clubs, including Palace. And the reason for this is because Palace's academy status is low, or was low. It's now got its Category A standard. And I think it's now in a position where it's going to be able to justifiably go to the cages of South London and go looking for the next Jadon Sancho and offering them a place in the academy at Palace, and good chance that they'll take it. And if they can demonstrate that they're giving young players minutes in the first team and getting Premier League football and staying in the Premier League, then we could end up recruiting some extremely exciting young players. And it's, you know, it's a potential platform there for a very, very exciting football club and playing some quite exciting football. But the other thing that we're looking at it, and the more Palace way of looking at it, is that we're signing a load of hopelessly inexperienced players with an unproven coach. So we could be relegated at the end of the season. So take your pick, really, depending on your attitude.
Well, I don't know about you, Jan, but I'm really looking forward to seeing Palace now because I think it's going to be riotous fun, I think, one way or the other.
It's Palace, isn't it? And we all know what Palace are like. So,
you say that, but the last few seasons, Palace have been pretty, should we say, dull to watch.
True.
So hopefully True. It's going to have add a bit more excitement to proceedings.
Yeah, absolutely. I'm full of trepidation, as I always am at the start of a Premier League season with Crystal Palace. But I mean, yeah, it is. It's nice to hear the club being spoken about in such favourable terms. And it is, you know, I know you don't want to get, it's a bit gauche to get involved in transfer excitement and not terribly authentic. But when your club is going out like buying, you know, exciting young players, that is exciting to get involved in. And I almost feel like putting on Sky Sports News every now and then and watching the transfer show to see who the next bright young thing is. But then I realised that that's just a cavalcade of shit and against all of the great qualities and principles of football.
Yes, and talking about that, why don't we talk about some of the big transfers of the summer?
Yes. I'll just get my mobile phones out.
Well, you did mention Sancho there, and I suppose Sancho was the biggest move of the summer, wasn't he, for about 5 minutes, and then the last couple of weeks have happened. So as a Dortmund fan, do you want to talk a bit about the Sancho saga coming to a close finally?
Well, I'm quite pleased that it's over. I'm very sad that he's left, but I'm pleased that it's over. He seems to be very pleased that he's gone, and I'm happy for him there. He's put in 3 years of fantastic service for Borussia Dortmund and has really come on. If he settles in at United and if he settles in Klettsad and plays well, then he's going to rip the Premier League apart. It may not happen because it doesn't always work out transfers. And, you know, there are maybe question marks about, you know, the coach of Manchester United and whether or not he's that good. But if it comes off, then people will be genuinely asking questions about why Gareth Southgate didn't integrate him into the first team of England sooner than he did. Because, I maintain he's probably on form England's best forward going into that tournament. But anyway, that is an old argument now, officially an old argument. But from Dortmund, I mean, it's kind of life goes on. This is how Dortmund work. I mean, they sign these players, they bring them on, they flog them for cash. I mean, that's, you can't get upset about it. And they brought in Daniel Malen from the Eredivisie, and we'll see how he gets on. So, you know, life goes on, basically.
Yeah, yeah. And I mean, great signing for Man United, as if they didn't have enough options up front either. Do you think he's going to really make that much of a difference at United, considering how many options they've got up front anyway? They can't play them all, can they? Or maybe they can.
No, they can't, but you don't spend that much money not to play him. You know, he's clearly shown that he can do it. Probably one of the hardest leagues in the world to play in, and he went there and they put a lot of pressure on him, giving him the number 7 shirt straight away, didn't they, Terry? So he's just dealt with that and gone with it and just got better and better and better and better. I share Terry's excitement in seeing him in the Premier League. I think it's going to be great. Hopefully, after some troubling times that Man United have had, I know they've had relative success of late, but you know, it would be good to see them turn a corner with players like Sancho. Really good quality players that it's hard to hate, who will make me want to watch them rather than they're just on and there's nothing else to watch because Man United's always on the telly. It'll be good to see players of that calibre and that quality, young players that are able to make a difference, and I hope he will.
Yeah, well, and also talking about players who struggled to make Gareth Southgate's first team, Man City have taken a bit of a punt on one of Southgate's bench warmers as well, haven't they?
They spent such a stupidly large amount of money on Jack Grealish. I mean, I like Jack Grealish. I think I really like flair players. He's incredibly, incredibly talented. He wears his socks far too low. It really winds me up. But I can't help but love what that guy can do with the football. He is so, 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 so talented. And it would be great to see someone like him, who seems like a genuinely nice lad as well and loves his game, to see him, you know, there with arguably the world's best coach and seeing what Pep can do with them and being surrounded with that quality as well. You know, potentially could go either way, but you know, I'm quite positive about it. I'm looking forward to seeing what he can do at City. If I was Raheem Sterling, I probably wouldn't be too happy with that transfer. I think they've been talking about him going for a little while. He wasn't necessarily Pep's cup of tea last year, so that could mean that he moves on. But certainly for young Mr. Grealish, I think it's a great move for him, and I really wish him the best. It's going to be good to see him.
I've been reading some people saying that Kevin De Bruyne is now hitting 30, and now they're lining him up to be the successor in that role. But Terry, £100 million, £100 million, for Jack Grealish. Is this the same as when United bought Rooney, or do you think this is more like when Chelsea bought Lampard?
I don't think that he's quite at that point that Rooney was when he went to United. I think that Rooney was actually better established, than Grealish is now. I mean, Rooney was like undroppable, wasn't he, by the time he moved to United. Grealish is a phenomenal talent. absolutely phenomenal talent. But I mean, he has only really been tested at sort of like lower mid table Premier League level. He's not played Champions League. He's not starting for England. You could make an argument that that's Gareth Southgate's problem and not Jack Grealish's problem, and that Jack Grealish is good enough to start. It seems like an awful lot of money on a player who I think is still probably mostly potential at the moment. But, I mean, there's no... You've got to trust that Guardiola and the guys at City have run the numbers on the guy, look at the metrics and thinks, yeah, no, this guy is going to be a star. He's almost there. Let's get him now and let's pay what we need to pay to get him, in which case then that's fine. And the decision, I guess, will be vindicated. I am not taking issue with Man City's transfer policy, but it does seem like an extraordinarily high amount of money to pay for a player. But I think the issue is also the narrative about Grealish. It's more than just metrics that determine transfer fees. It's narrative as well. Grealish is an Aston Villa lad. That's his local team. He's the poster boy for that football club. And he is, like Jan says, he's a proper shirts out, socks down type player. You know, he evokes memories of the recently departed Frank Worthington, of Rodney Marsh, of Robin Friday, whom no one ever saw, of these kind of, you know, like, you know, graceful, creative, maverick footballers. That surrounds him, and he's loved, he's adored as a consequence, even by neutrals, and that seems to me to make him expensive. And so they've had to pay that money as well. I think that there's some overhead there, just getting him away from Aston Villa, persuading him. It just takes that much money to persuade Aston Villa to part with him and to persuade Grealish to make the move. It's an extraordinary signing in that respect. There's no reason to assume why it won't pay off. But I would suggest it's a risk. It's a bigger risk than a lot of transfers.
There is the fact that he signed a long-term contract. I think if it wasn't early last season, it was towards the end of the season before.
This is true.
So there's that does add to it. But you're quite right. You need to prize him away. And, you know, English players for English teams seem to always cost more. I've never quite worked that out. And the fact he's going to City, it's well known that they've got all of the cash. So Aston Villa clearly saw them coming and thought, well, you know, if he's going to go, we might as well extract as much as we can, really. So I would say that, you know, they were as much involved in that as Manchester City. I just hope that the number doesn't destroy him, you know, because when people go for big money, we've seen it before, haven't we? When you go for huge fees like that, it can get in your head, can't it? I'm saying it can get in your head, like it's happened to me all the time. It's never happened to me, not even once. But I would imagine if I was a young footballer and having £100 million pound price tag on my head, that might be an issue. Or maybe not. Maybe modern footballers now, you know, it's part of the course for them, and they're able to just deal with that and just go and do their thing.
I look at Grealish and I look at his style and manner. I mean, yes, he's got that air of maverick about him, but I also think this is a kid who's grown up watching Cristiano Ronaldo as well. And I think that's been a massive influence on his game. And really, that's what City are buying as well. They're buying someone with that sort of star quality. Something that you may not get with someone like Phil Foden, who has all the talent, but may not just have that certain X factor that makes him the global megastar that Grealish has the potential to be. I don't know. What do you think about that, Terry?
I think that's fair analysis. I mean, I think you're right about Phil Foden, who perhaps is just on the wrong side of utilitarian. I think you're right about Grealish, is the way in which he plays. The one thing that puzzles me is like comparisons with De Bruyne. He never seems as quick as De Bruyne to me. I can't see him playing out on the flank, not permanently. I can see him playing through the middle personally, but as a number 10. But anyway, I think that is perfectly fair analysis, Graham. He's got that ability, I think, to do something that no one else can do. And you're right. I mean, the thing is that there are no mavericks anymore. The last proper football maverick in modern football was probably Lee Trundle.
Yes.
Because those kind of guys just don't make the grade anymore. They're usually not fit enough. You know, he's got the style of a maverick. And he reminds you of maverick footballers, but he's not a maverick. Mm. And I can't believe I've said maverick in such a short space of time so many times. It's What a podcast.
Yeah, indeed. If you had Maverick on your bingo card this week, you can tick it multiple times. Man City, well, they looked like they were lined up to sign Kane as well, but that has all seemed to have gone quiet now, and he seems to be backtracking there and staying at Tottenham. I didn't stay across this story at all because, as Terry says, look, transfer speculation is yawny. It's there for the clicks. But when you make it a soap opera like this, not turning up to training, then sort of saying, oh, this, no, I didn't not turn up for training. I just wasn't there at training.
Well, actually, I don't like soap operas at all, but the transfer merry-go-round and the stories in the press have always captured my imagination since I was a kid, and I haven't left that behind in my childhood. So I still quite like it, and I always go on the BBC website in the morning just to see what they're saying for their collection of newspaper stories there. So, yeah, I quite like it. But Kane, you can read between the lines on that one. He said, apparently, in sources close to the player, yada, 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 said that he's keen to go. I think that was proved to be true by the fact that he didn't turn up for training. There's some serious journalists that are close to these transfers rather than just, you know, the people who work for the Red Tops who report some of these things in very serious ways. And why wouldn't he want to move on? It sounds crazy talking about someone in their 20s is advancing in their years, but you take my point. For a footballer, it takes a special talent to be still doing it into your 30s at that level. And, you know, Spurs looked like they were going to go and do something special when Poch was there. That didn't work out. And maybe he's just seeing the writing on the wall and just going, look, you know, we're not going to be there like we were before. You know, they brought in Mourinho. That didn't work itself out. And now they've got Nuno in there, who I really rate, but he fell out somehow at Wolves, and it seems like the whole thing was built around him. So, you know, maybe his stock's not as high as it was. So, you know, you can see him going, well, am I going to achieve what I want to achieve at Spurs? I mean, we came so close a few years ago in the Champions League, and it didn't quite work out for them. So maybe he's thinking, well, you know, I haven't got long left, so I want to get in the Champions League now and do something special. I think he would be brilliant at City. I mean, that would just, to be honest with you, that might actually make the league a bit boring, because with Grealish and all the other good, the quality they've got, I mean, supreme quality they've got there, to put Harry Kane at the top of that would just make them really, really unstoppable. But, you know, it'll be good for him as a player who wants to go out and do something. You know, why not join the best team in the land? And so he should. But obviously, you sign a contract and, you know, you can't get out of those. You know, if you're Daniel Levy, you must be looking at this. I've got a supremely talented player. He is delivering for us, but he's not happy. And unhappy players don't deliver. If he remains unhappy, they're going to have to get rid of him soon. Otherwise, he'll have a bad season. And then your stock goes down and, you know, they're not going to get any decent money for him. So it's an interesting one to watch. Very interesting.
Yeah, Terry, I mean, can you imagine Harry Kane, Raheem Sterling, Jack Grealish on the same team? No one would be able to resist that, would they?
No one's going to be asked to watch that. Yeah, I mean, it's a recipe for a very, very, very one-sided title race, isn't it? Because, I mean, Jan's right. Harry Kane, you would think, would fit in perfectly at City. I mean, he's got all the requirements there. Phenomenal ability and just the innate ability to be able to find the goal, even when he's not really playing that well either, to be perfectly honest with you. He's a massive shithouser as well, and, you know, would fit in really, really well at a championship winning team.
He's very much a Pep player, isn't he?
He's very much a Pep player, yeah. I think he'd get on very well there. I won't go on too much about it, but if he says he's made a gentleman's agreement with Levy that he can leave for the right offer or something like that, and then that's now been reneged upon, then he has every right to be miffed. But that said, he signed a massive long-term contract and no one forced him to sign it. And he made a mistake. He made an error in judgment signing that contract. He should have thought a little bit more about it, and he should have thought to himself, look, this is Tottenham. How likely are we to win the league? How likely are we to win the Champions League? I know they came really close at one time, but that was a wonderful, remarkable journey. It was like a piece of footballing romance. It wasn't sort of like what Tottenham do, frankly. They're just not that successful, a football club, to do that. And they were never going to be able to meet his expectations and his ambitions, and he should never have signed. So it's his own stupid fault. And now he's made himself look like a bit of a tit by not showing up for work. And that's just bad form, right? I mean, I know it's somewhat different, and I know he's probably got every right to be angry, but, like, you know, nobody gets away with not turning up for their shift.
Yeah.
It's just bad form.
And now he's lost the opportunity of having a press conference and bursting into tears for leaving his club.
Yeah.
Which is what every player does.
Everybody dreams. Every player, that's every boy's dream, is to have a tearful press conference as they leave a club.
Yeah, and of course, the biggest story of the week in world football has been Leo Messi leaving Barcelona. Now, when we started this podcast back in 2009, Leo Messi hadn't even won one Ballon d'Or back then. He's won six in that time, which I think we can share some of the credit for that, actually.
Totally.
Yeah, all he'd won previously was, he'd won the Champions League in 2009, but...
If I remember rightly, he was number one on our top 300 players to watch in 2010. he was number 199 on our top 300 players to watch in 2010. Sorry.
But it has been a bit of a roller coaster, isn't it? Have you been glued to this transfer story at least? You can't escape this one, can you?
You can't escape this one. I mean, it's been everywhere. I mean, it wasn't just, front page news on the sports outlets I follow. This was actual front page news and on actual newspaper. Well, I say actual newspapers. We're not blessed with actual newspapers in the UK, really, save a few. Phenomenal player. And as we've said before, we've talked, I think, every close season, maybe for the last few years anyway, about whether he would leave. And I think we all concurred that, he was just wedded to Barcelona and he would never leave there. And it looked that was going to be the case. They let him drift out of contract. He didn't make any noises about going anywhere else. It looked like it was a done deal. And there was talk of him halving his salary, which I doubt would really happen. I would imagine it would be half of his salary for the rest of his life to make him stay. I think that, I'm not even joking, I think that actually was discussed. But obviously Barcelona have been playing, I was going to say a dangerous game, they've been playing, do you remember when Prince George was taught how to play cards by Blackadder? and he said the idea of the game is to lose as much money as you possibly can. Apparently I've got a real gift for it. Well, I think Mr. Blackadder went over to Catalonia, didn't he, and taught them all how to play buying not very good players after you've sold Neymar and Suarez. And as well as that, Messi was earning so much money there. Maybe he's contributed to the decline of the club that he loves and made him what he is. But yeah, crazy, really crazy set of circumstances. Looks like he's going to end up in Paris. And by all accounts, that deal's going to pay for itself, even though the numbers involved are staggering. He is regarded as, not by me, but he is regarded as one of the best players ever to play football. I mean, anybody who can keep Lee Catamol away from the Ballon d'Or for 10 years has got to be have some ability, true. But I've always, said he's like watching a machine, isn't he? He's a well-tuned machine. I prefer flair players myself. Will probably mean I have to watch the odd game of French football, which, I'm not overly enamored with, but I will. No, I shouldn't be like that. You'll have to watch the first game that he plays there just because it's Messi playing for somebody other than Barcelona.
Barcelona have dipped into Dortmund in the past to bolster their squad, spending huge amounts on some fella called, what's his name? It's Terry, help me out here.
I don't know who you're talking about.
Dembélé la frappe! Ousmane Dembélé, that's the one. And of course, that hasn't worked out for them. They spent huge money on Coutinho, that didn't work out for them either. And Messi has been paid something like £500 million in the last 4 years. And even if his salary was reduced by half, as a lot of people are saying, he would still be earning more money than Neymar. He'd still be on at least €35 million a year. This is the insane figures we're talking about with Messi. Has he broken Barcelona, or has just Barcelona just been kicked into the bin by crap management over the last 5 years?
It's a bit of a column A and a bit of column B, but I mean, I think column B being the mismanagement of Barca in general is much, much higher than column A. Like, certainly those are, massive amounts of money to get for a player who is fiercely and hugely loyal to to the club. I mean, surely it might have been possible to have been able to negotiate that down a little bit more. But that said, Leo Messi may well love Barcelona, may well have been desperate to keep playing for Barcelona, but he is a man who knows his value and will stick to that like all good pros should do. Now, on this occasion, it's possible he's been a bit irresponsible. But I think the greater irresponsible lies with the management of Barcelona themselves, who, as you point out, Graham, have made some pretty disastrous decisions, particularly in lines of recruitment. They've had all the money in the world and the ability, you know, seemingly ability to be able to, raise even more if they chose to. But the well is now dry and they've frittered it all away and now no one is touching them. And they're in this ludicrous situation whereby they've signed new players to come in and they can't actually register those players. So they can't play them. And one of those players is Leo Messi. So if Leo Messi, if they could able to make some kind of financial arrangement with Leo Messi that even fell within the guidelines of the La Liga's fiscal rules, which they haven't been able to do, they wouldn't have been able to sign him because Barcelona don't meet the fiscal requirements laid down by La Liga in order for them to actually physically register players. So you could argue that Leo Messi could play for free, but he can't play for free because they can't actually register him as a player for Barcelona because he is no longer a player for Barcelona. So, you know, it's absolutely insane. Barcelona are now not in a position to abide by those fiscal rules because they won't sign up to the new financial package that CWC, the venture capitalists, have put in there and La Liga have taken, because both Barcelona and Real Madrid think it's grossly unfair to them, and they may well have a point. And then there's this whole guff about the European Super League, which they're still wedded to. And the issue is if they signed up for the new financial package, they would basically be saying goodbye to the European Super League, and they don't want to do that. It's a disgrace, frankly. And they deserve everything that comes their way, not their fans, but that football club. That football club used to be a paragon of virtue.
Yeah.
It used to be one of the great football clubs. You would dream about playing for Barcelona because not only were they a fantastic football club that played brilliant football, had brilliant players, but won loads and loads of stuff, but they also meant something. And now look at them. Pathetic. It's pathetic.
So, yeah, they've got a load of players now that they can't actually register. So it's going to be interesting to see what sort of team they put out this week against Sociedad on Sunday night, which is the last game of our weekend box set.
It's the sound of football weekend box set.
Box set's back.
The box set's back. Of course it's back. And new listeners, if you don't know what the box set is every week we put together a newsletter which lists seven games that we think are going to be the games you should be watching between Friday and Sunday. It's a box set. It's seven games to watch. And this week we've got, well, we start off on Friday evening with Brentford v Arsenal. Brentford playing their first game in the Premier League. First game in the top flight since late 40s, I think. So a long, long, long time's gone since they've been in the top level. And my club, Arsenal, are playing with them.
Bit of a banana skin for your first game,
yeah,
isn't it?
It's a bit, that one. Saturday, we've got Man United Leeds. And we've got Dortmund versus Eintracht Frankfurt on 5:30. And, of course, the weekend will be finished up with Barcelona. But before that, you've got Tottenham versus Man City. Oh, well.
I wonder who's going to be starting up front for Tottenham. That almost writes itself, that one. Can I have that one?
Oh, go on then. You can have that one. I can see it now. It is literally writing itself.
Yes.
The words are just magically appearing. And if you want to see what we put in the box set this week, then get along to sofpodcast.com. Click on the link for the weekend box set and you can sign up there. And it comes into your email on Friday lunchtime. But that is all we have time for this week. So from me, Graham Sibley, from Jan Bilton and from Terry Club, it's goodbye.
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 You can contact us through our website, sofpodcast.com, via Twitter, @soundoffootball, or on facebook.com/soundoffootball.
Okay then, mate.
All right then.
Yep.
See you later. See you next week. Oh, no, I'm not here next week, remember?
You're not here next week?
Holidays. Holidays
okay.
next week.
Okay. 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 I'll get someone else in. Okay.
Yeah, cool. Oh. Well, you don't have to get someone else in.
No, just, no, I will. We'll get...
All right, mate.
Yeah.
Not permanently, just for the week.
Yeah.
Make sure they're rubbish, though.
Oh, no. We'll make sure they're really good, won't we? Yeah.
You always get someone who's better than me whenever I'm off. Makes me feel bad. I'm going now. Bye.
See you, Terry.
Where I'm wanted.
All right.